Did you hear what I said, Lord General?
What? Yes, I heard you. She's alive and to the southwest. You did well, Lunetta. The Creator will be pleased with you when I tell him of your aid.
I mean about how all the rest be the truth.
He frowned. What are you talking about? Lunetta drew her scraps of cloth up tight.
She said that the Council of Dead Men be made up of seditious pretenders. True. That the Imperial Order seeks only to hear whatever lies suit their purpose, and their purpose be conquest and domination. True. That they tore off her fingernails to make her speak lies. True. That the blood acts on rumor, as long as the result be a fresh grave. True.
Brogan shot to his feet. The blood of the fold fights evil. How dare you suggest otherwise, you filthy Streganicha? She winced as she bit her lower lip.
I do not say it be the truth, Lord General, only that it be the truth as she sees it.
He tugged his sash straight. He didn't want to spoil his triumph with Lunetta's prattle. She sees it wrong, and you know it. He thrust a finger at her. I've spent more time than you've a right to, more time than you be worth, to see that you understand the nature of good and evil. Lunetta stared at the floor.
Yes, my Lord General, you have spent more time than I be worth. Forgive me, they be her words, not mine.
Brogan finally withdrew his glare and took the case from his belt. He set it down, giving it a nudge with a thumb to make it straight with the edge of the table as he sat once more. He put Lunetta's insolence from his mind as he contemplated his next move. He was about to call for dinner when he remembered that there was one more witness waiting. He had found what he had sought. There was no need for further questioning, but it was always wise to be thorough.
Ettore, bring in the next witness.
Brogan glared at Lunetta as she faded back against the wall. She had done well, but then she had spoiled it by provoking him. Though he knew it was the evil in her that bubbled up whenever she did right, it galled him that she didn't try harder to suppress its influence. Maybe he had been too kind to her of late. In a weak moment, wanting to share his joy, he had given her a pretty. Perhaps she took that to mean that he would let her get away with insolence. He would not. Tobias ordered himself in his chair and folded his hands on the table, thinking again about his triumph, thinking about the prize of prizes. There was no need to force a smile this time. He was a bit startled to look up and see a young girl glide into the room ahead of the two guards. The old coat she wore dragged the ground. Behind the girl, between the guards, a squat old woman in a tattered wrap of brown blanket limped along with a rolling gait. When the group came to a halt before the table, the girl smiled at him.
You've a very nice warm home, my lord. We've enjoyed our day here. May we return your hospitality?
The old woman added a smile of her own.
I'm pleased you have had a chance to get warm, and would be grateful if you and your—
He lifted a questioning eyebrow.
Grandmama,
the girl said.
Yes, grandmama. I would be grateful if you and your grandmama would answer a few questions, that's all.
Ah,
the old woman said.
Questions, is it? Questions can be dangerous, my lord.
Dangerous?
Tobias rubbed two fingers over the furrows on his forehead.
I seek only the truth, madam. If you answer honestly, no harm will come to you. You have my word.
She grinned, showing the gaps where teeth were missing.
I meant for you, my lord.
She cackled softly to herself, then leaned toward him with a grim expression.
You might not like the answers or pay heed to them.
Tobias waved off her concern.
You let me worry about that.
She straightened, smiling again.
If you wish, my lord.
She scratched the side of her nose.
What are your questions, then?
Tobias leaned back, studying the woman's waiting eyes.
The Midlands has been in turmoil of late, and we want to know if the Keeper's minions have a hand in the strife shadowing the lands. Have you heard any of the council members speak against the Creator?
Councillors rarely come down to the market to discuss theology with old ladies, my lord. Nor would I suppose any be so foolish as to publicly reveal any underworld connections, had they any.
Well, what have you heard about what they have had to say?
She lifted an eyebrow.
You wish to hear rumors from Stentor Street, my lord? State which sort of rumor it is you would like to hear, and I can tell you one to fit your needs.
Tobias drummed his fingers on the table.
I am not interested in rumor, madam, simply the truth.
She nodded.
Of course you are, my lord, and you shall have it. Sometimes people can be interested in the most foolish of things.
He cleared his throat in annoyance.
I have heard any number of rumors already and don't need any more. I need to know the truth of what has been going on in Aedendrill. Why, I've even heard that the council has been executed, as well as the mother confessor.
Her narrow-eyed smile returned.
Then why wouldn't a man of your high status simply stop by the palace as he rode in and ask to see the council? That would make more sense than dragging in all sort of people who would have no direct knowledge and asking them. The truth would be better discerned with your own eyes, my lord.
Brogan pressed his lips together.
I wasn't here when the rumors say the Mother Confessor was executed.
Ah, so it's the Mother Confessor you're interested in, then. Why didn't you simply say so, instead of going all round about? I heard that she was beheaded, but I didn't see it. My granddaughter saw it, though, didn't you, my dear?
The little girl nodded.
Yes, my lord. Saw it myself, I did. Chopped her head right off, they did.
Brogan made a show of sighing.
That was what I feared. She is dead, then.
The girl shook her head.
Didn't say that, my lord. I said I saw them chop off her head.
She looked right into his eyes and smiled.
What do you mean by that?
Brogan shot a glare up at the old woman.
What does she mean by that?
What she says, my lord. Aedendrill has always been a city with a strong undercurrent of magic, but it has been fairly crackling with it of late. Where magic is involved, you can't always trust your eyes alone. Though she is young, this one is smart enough to know that much. A man of your profession would know it, too.
Crackling with magic. That portends evil. What do you know about the Keeper's minions?
Terrible they are, my lord. But magic is, in itself, not evil. It exists without guile of its own.
Brogan's fists tightened.
Magic is the Keeper's taint.
She cackled again.
That would be like saying that the shiny silver knife at your belt is the Keeper's taint. If used to menace or harm an innocent, then the holder of the knife is evil. But if, for instance, it is used to defend life against a fanatical lunatic, no matter his high standing, then the holder of the knife is good. The knife is neither, because each can use it.
Her eyes seemed to go out of focus, and her voice lowered to a hiss.
But if used for retribution, magic is vengeance incarnate.
Well, then, in your view, is this magic you say is about in the city being used for good or evil?
For both, my lord. This is, after all, the home of the Wizard's Keep, and a seat of power. Confessors have ruled here for thousands of years, as well as wizards. Power draws power. Conflict is afoot. Scaled creatures, called Mriswith, have begun to appear out of the very air and gut any innocent in their way. An ominous omen, if ever there was one. Other magic lurks to snatch the rash or unwary. Why, the very night is alive with magic carried on the gossamer wings of dreams.
She peered at him with one faded blue eye as she went on.
A child who is fascinated with fire could easily be incinerated here. Such a child would be well advised to be very careful and leave at the first opportunity before he inadvertently put his hand into a flame. Why, people are even pulled off the street to have their words filtered through a sieve of magic.
Brogan leaned forward with a smoldering expression.
And what do you know about magic, madam?
An equivocal question, my lord. Could you be more explicit?
Tobias paused for a moment, trying to pick the nettles out of her ramblings. He had dealt with her kind before, and he realized she was gulling him off the subject, off the trail. He brought back his polite smile.
Well, for instance, your granddaughter says she saw the Mother Confessor beheaded, but that doesn't mean she be dead. You say magic can make it so. I'm intrigued by such a statement. While it's true that I know magic can occasionally fool people, I've only heard of it working small deceptions. Could you explain how death could be revoked?
Revoke death? The Keeper has such power.
Brogan pressed forward against the table.
Are you saying the Keeper himself brought her back to life?
She cackled.
No, my lord. You are so persistent in what you want that you do not pay attention and hear only what you want to hear. You specifically asked how death could be revoked. The Keeper can revoke death. At least, I'm assuming he can, because he is the ruler of the dead, holds power over life and death, so it's only natural to believe that.
Is she alive or not?
The old woman blinked at him.
How would I know that, my lord?
Brogan ground his teeth.
You said that just because people saw her beheaded, that doesn't mean she be dead.
Oh, back to that, are we? Well, magic can perform such a ruse, but that does not mean it did. I said only that it could. Then you went off scent asking about death being revoked, quite a separate issue, my lord.
How, woman? How can magic accomplish such high deception?
She snugged the tattered blanket up around her shoulders.
A death spell, my lord.
Brogan glanced to Lynetta. Her beady eyes were fixed on the old woman, and she was scratching her arms.
A death spell? And what exactly is a death spell?
Well, I have never seen one executed, so to speak.
She chuckled at her own joke.
So I can't give you proper witness, but I can tell you what I've been told, if you've a wish to hear second-hand knowledge.
Brogan spoke through clenched teeth.
Tell me.
Seeing a death, comprehending it, is something we all recognize at a spiritual level. It's this seeing of a body with its soul or spirit departed that we recognize as death. A death spell can mimic a real death by making people believe they have seen a death, that they have seen the body without its soul, and so make them viscerally accept the event as true.
She shook her head as if she found the matter both amazing and scandalizing.
Very dangerous it is. It requires invoking the aid of the spirits to hold the person's spirit while the web is cast. If anything goes wrong, the subject's spirit would be cast helpless into the underworld, a very unpleasant way to die. If everything goes right, and if the spirits return that which they have preserved, I am told it will work, and the person will live, but those seeing it will think them dead. Very chancy, though. While I've heard of it, I've never heard of it actually being attempted, so it may be nothing more than hearsay.
Brogan sat quietly moving the pieces of information around in his mind, pulling together things he had learned this day and things he had learned in the past, searching for the right fit. It must have been a trick done to escape justice, but not one she could have accomplished without accomplices. The old woman put a hand to the girl's shoulder and started shuffling off.
Thank you for the warmth, my lord, but I grow tired of your haphazard questions, and I've better things to do.
Who could perform a death spell?
The old woman halted. Her washed-out blue eyes lit up with a dangerous cast.
Only a wizard, my lord. Only a wizard of immense power and great knowledge.
Brogan fixed her with a dangerous look of his own.
And are there any wizards here in Aiden Drill?
Her slow smile made her faded eyes gleam. She reached into a pocket under the blanket and tossed a coin on the table, where it spun in lazy circles before finally toppling over before him. Brogan picked up the silver coin, squinting at the strike.
I asked a question, old woman. I expect an answer.
You hold it, my lord.
I've never seen a coin like this. What's this image on it? It looks to be a grand structure of some sort.
Oh, it is, my lord, she hissed. It's the spawn of salvation and doom, of wizards and magic, the Palace of the Prophets.
Never heard of it. What is this Palace of the Prophets?
The old woman smiled a private smile.
Ask your sorceress, my lord.
She turned again to leave. Brogan shot to his feet.
No one gave you permission to leave, you toothless old hag.
She peered back over her shoulder.
It's the liver, my lord.
Brogan blinked.
What?
I've a taste for raw liver, my lord. I believe that's what makes the teeth fall out over time.
Just then, Galtero appeared, squeezing past the woman and girl as they went through the doorway. He saluted with fingertips to bowed forehead.
Lord General, I have a report.
Yes, yes, in a moment.
But, Brogan held up a silencing finger to Galtero as he turned to Lynetta.
Well?
Every word true, Lord General. She be like a water bug skimming the surface of the water, touching only the tips of her feet to it, but everything she said be true. She knows much more than she tells, but what she tells be true.
Brogan waggled his hand impatiently for Ettore to come forward. The man stiffened to attention before the table as his crimson cape swished around his legs.
Lord General,
Brogan's eyes narrowed.
I think we may have a baneling on our hands.
How would you like to prove yourself worthy of the cape you wear?
Yes, Lord General, very much.
Before she gets out of the building, take her into custody. She be under suspicion of being a baneling.
What of the girl, Lord General?
Weren't you watching, Ettore? She will no doubt prove to be the baneling's familiar. Besides, we don't want her out in the street crying out that her grandmama is being held by the blood of the fold. The other, the cook,
would be missed, and that would bring troublemakers down around us. But this pair won't be missed from the street. They be ours now.
Yes, Lord General. I will see to it at once.
I will want to question her as soon as possible. The girl, too. Brogan held up a cautionary finger.
They had better be ready to answer truthfully any question I ask.
Atore's youthful face bent into a gruesome grin.
They will confess when you come to them, Lord General. By the Creator, they will be ready to confess.
Very good, lad.
Now be off, before they gain the street.
As Atore dashed through the door, Galtero stepped impatiently forward, but waited silently before the table. Brogan sank down into the chair, his voice distant.
Galtero, you did your usual thorough good job. The witnesses you brought me proved up to my standards.
Tobias Brogan slid the silver coin aside, unfastened the leather straps on the case, and dumped his trophies into a pile on the table. With tender care, he spread them out, touching the once living flesh. Each was a desiccated nipple, the left nipple, the one closest to the Baneling's evil heart, with enough skin to include the tattooed name. It represented only a fraction of the Banelings he had uncovered, the most important of the important, the most vile of the Keeper's fiends. As he replaced the booty, one at a time, he read the name of each Baneling he had put to the torch. He remembered each chase and capture and inquisition. Flames of anger flared up at remembering the unholy crimes to which each had finally confessed. He remembered justice being done each time. But he had yet to win the prize of prizes. The Mother Confessor.
Galtero, he said in a soft, stony voice. I have her trail. Get the men together. We will leave at once.
I think you had better hear what I have to say first, Lord General.
Chapter 11.
It be the Daharans, Lord General.
After replacing the last of his trophies, Brogan flipped the lid shut on his case and looked up into Galtero's dark eyes.
What about the Daharans? Early today, I knew something be afoot when they started gathering. That be what had the people in such turmoil.
Gathering?
Galtero nodded.
Around the Confessor's palace, Lord General. At mid-afternoon, they all started chanting.
Astonished, Tobias leaned toward his colonel.
Chanting? Do you remember their words?
Galtero hooked a thumb behind his weapons belt.
It went on for 2 full hours. It would be hard to forget it after hearing it that many times. The Daharans bowed down, forehead to the ground, and all chanted the same words. Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we be sheltered. In your wisdom we be humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives be yours.
Brogan tapped a finger on the table.
And all the Daharans did this. How many are there?
Every one of them, Lord General, and there be more than we thought. They filled the square outside the palace, overflowed into the parks and plazas, and then the streets all around. You could not walk among them, they be packed in so tight, as if all wanted to be as close to the Confessor's palace as they could get. To my count, there be near to 200,000 in the city, with most gathered around the palace. While it went on, the people be in a near panic, not knowing what be happening. I rode out into the country, and there were a great many more who did not come into the city. They too, wherever they be, bowed forehead to the ground and chanted along with their brothers in the city. I rode hard to cover as much ground as possible and see all I could, and I did not see even one Daharan who not be bowed down chanting. You could hear their voices from the hills and passes around the city. None paid any heed to us as we scouted.
Brogan closed his mouth.
Then he must be here, this Master Rawl.
Galtero shifted his weight to his other foot.
He be here, Lord General. While the Daharans chanted, the whole time they chanted, he stood atop the steps of the grand entrance and watched. Every man was bowed to him, as if he be the Creator himself.
Brogan's mouth twisted in disgust.
I always suspected the Daharans were heathens. Imagine, praying to a mere man. What happened then?
Galtero looked tired. He had been riding hard all day.
When it ended, they all leaped into the air, cheering and whooping for a good long time, as if they had just been delivered from the Keeper's grasp. I was able to ride 2 miles around the back of the crowd, while the shouting and acclaim went on. Finally, the men made way as 2 bodies were carried into the square, and all went silent. A pyre was thrown up and set ablaze. The whole time until the bodies were ash, and the ash at last taken to be buried,
This Master Rawl stood on the steps and watched.
Did you get a good look at him?
Galtero shook his head. The men were packed tight together, and I feared to force my way closer, lest they set upon me for interrupting their ceremony. Brogan rubbed his case with the side of a thumb as he stared off in thought.
Of course. I wouldn't expect you to throw your life away just to try to see what the man looks like.
Galtero hesitated a moment. You will see him yourself soon enough, Lord General. You have been invited to the palace. Brogan looked up.
I don't have time for pleasantries. We must be off after the Mother Confessor.
Galtero drew a paper from his pocket and handed it over. I returned, just as a big group of Daharan soldiers were about to enter our palace. I stopped them and asked what they wanted, and they gave me this. Brogan unfolded the paper and read the hasty scrawl. Lord Rawl invites all dignitaries, diplomats, and officials of all lands to the Confessor's palace. At once. He crumbled the paper in his fist.
I don't take audiences, I give them. And, as I said, I don't have time for pleasantries.
Galtero lifted a thumb toward the street. I reasoned as much and told the soldiers who gave it to me that I would pass the invitation along, but that we be busy with other matters, and I didn't know if anyone from the Nicobarese Palace would have time to attend. He said that Lord Rawl wanted everyone there, and we had better find the time. Brogan waved off the threat.
No one is going to cause trouble here in Aidendrill, because we don't attend a social affair to meet a new tribal leader.
Lord General, King's Row be shoulder to shoulder with Daharan soldiers. Every palace on the row be surrounded, along with city administration buildings. The man who gave me the paper said he be here to escort us to the Confessor's palace. He said that if we are not out there soon, they would come in and get us. He had 10,000 troops standing behind him, watching me as he said it. These men are not shopkeepers and farmers, playing at being soldier for a few months. These be professional warriors, and they look very determined. I have faith in the blood of the fold to go against these men, if we could get to our main force. But we brought only a fist of the fold with us into the city. 500 are not near enough men to fight our way out. We would not make it 20 yards before every one of us would be cut down. Brogan glanced at Lunetta, standing against the wall. She was stroking and smoothing her colored patches, not paying any attention to the discussion. They might have only 500 men in the city, but they also had Lunetta. He didn't know what this Lord Rawl's game was, but it didn't really matter. Dahara was aligned with and took orders from the Imperial Order. It was probably just an attempt to put himself in higher standing within the Order. There were always those who wanted power, but didn't want to concern themselves with the moral imperative that went along with it.
Very well. It will be dark soon, anyway. We will go to this ceremony, smile at the new Master Rawl, drink his wine, eat his food, and make him welcome. At dawn, we leave Aidendrill to the Imperial Order, and be off after the Mother Confessor. He gestured to his sister. Lunetta, come with us.
And how will you find her?
Lunetta scratched her arm.
The Mother Confessor, Lord General, how will you find her?
Tobias pushed his chair back and stood.
She be to the southwest. We have more than enough men to search. We will find her.
Really?
Lunetta still displayed a streak of insolence from having used her power.
Tell me how you will know her.
She be the Mother Confessor. How could we not know her, you stupid Strekanicha?
One brow arched as her feral gaze rose to meet his eyes.
Mother Confessor be dead? How can you see a dead person walking?
She not be dead. The cook knows the truth of that. You said so yourself. The Mother Confessor be alive, and we will have her.
If what the old woman say be true, and a death spell was cast, then what would be its purpose? Tell Lunetta.
Tobias frowned.
To make people think she was killed so she could escape.
Lunetta smiled a sly smile.
And why is it they did not see her escape? For the same reason you will not find her.
Stop talking your magic jabber and tell me what you be talking about.
Lord General, if there be such a thing as a death spell, and it be used on the Mother Confessor, then it would only make sense that the magic would hide her identity. It would explain how she escaped. No one recognized her because of the magic around her. For the same reason, you will not recognize her either.
Can you break it, break the spell?
Tobias stammered. Lunetta chuckled.
Lord General, I have never heard of such magic before. I know nothing about it.
Tobias realized his sister was right.
You know about magic. Tell me how we can know her.
Lunetta shook her head.
Lord General, I do not know how to see the strands of a wizard's web that was cast for the express purpose of hiding. I tell you only what would make sense.
and that be that if such a spell were used to hide her, then we too would not recognize her.
He lifted a finger toward her.
You have magic. You know a way to show us the truth.
Lord General, the old woman said that only a wizard could cast a death spell. If a wizard cast such a web, then to unravel it, we must be able to see the strands of his web. I do not know how to see the truth through the magic's deception.
Tobias rubbed his chin as he thought it over.
See through the deception? But how?
A moth be caught in a spider's web because he cannot see the strands. We be caught in this web, the same as those who saw her beheading, because we cannot see its strands. I do not know how we can.
Wizard, he murmured to himself.
He gestured to the silver coin on the table.
When I asked her if there be a wizard here in Adendrill, she showed me that coin with a building on it.
The Palace of the Prophets.
The name brought his head up.
Yes, that be what she called it. She said to ask you what it be. How do you know of it? Where did you hear about this Palace of the Prophets?
Lunetta shrank back into herself and looked away.
Just after you be born, Mama told me about it. It be a place where sorceresses...
Streganitia, he corrected.
She paused a moment.
It be a place where Streganitia train men to be wizards.
Then it be a house of evil.
She stood stooped and stiff as he looked down at the coin.
What would Mama know about such an evil place?
Mama be dead, Tobias. Leave her be, she whispered.
He shot her a withering scowl.
We will talk about this later.
He straightened his sash of rank and ordered his silver-embroidered gray coat before picking up his crimson cape.
The old woman must have meant that there be a wizard in Adendrill who was trained at this house of evil.
He redirected his attention to Galtero.
Fortunately, Ettore is holding her for further questioning. That old woman has a lot more to tell us. I can feel it in my bones.
Galtero nodded. We better be off for the Confessor's Palace, Lord General. Brogan flung his cape over his shoulders.
We will stop to see Ettore on our way out.
A fire had been well stoked and was roaring when the three of them entered the small room to check on Ettore and his two charges. Ettore was stripped to the waist, his lean muscles coated with a sheen of sweat. Several razors gleamed from their place atop the mantle, along with an assortment of sharpened spikes. The ends of iron rods were fanned out across the hearth. Their other ends glowed orange in the flames. The old woman cowered in the far corner and put a protective arm around the girl, who hid her face in the brown blanket.
Has she given you any trouble? Brogan asked.
Ettore flashed his familiar grin.
Her arrogant attitude vanished as soon as she found out we don't suffer insolence. That be the way with banelings. They give way when faced with the Creator's might. The three of us have to go out for a while. The rest of the fist will remain here at the palace in case you need assistance.
Brogan glanced to the iron rods glowing in the fire.
When I get back, I want her confession. I don't care about the girl, but the old woman had better still be alive and anxious to give it.
Ettore touched his fingers to his forehead as he bowed.
By the Creator, it shall be as you command, Lord General. She will confess all the crimes she has performed for the Keeper. Good. I have more questions, and I will have the answers.
I'll answer no more of your questions, the old woman said.
Ettore curled his lip as he scowled over his shoulder. The old woman shrank back farther into the dark corner.
You'll break that oath before this night be over, you old hag. You'll be begging to answer questions when you see what I do to your little evil one.
You get to watch her go first, so you can think about what be coming when it be your turn.
The little girl squealed and burrowed deeper into the old woman's blanket. Lunetta stared at the pair in the corner as she slowly scratched her arm.
Do you wish me to stay and attend, Ettore? Lord General, I think it'd be best if I did.
No. I want you to come with me tonight.
He glanced up at Galtero.
You did well, bringing me this one.
Galtero shook his head.
I never would have noticed her had she not tried to sell me honey cakes. Something about her made me suspicious.
Brogan shrugged.
That be the way with banelings. They be drawn to the blood of the fold, like moths to a flame. They be bold, because they have faith in their evil master.
He glanced again to the woman cringing in the corner.
But they all lose their spines when facing justice from the blood of the fold. This one will be a small trophy, but the Creator will be served by it.
Chapter 12
Stop it, Tobias growled. people will think you have fleas.
On a wide street lined with majestic maple trees to each side, their bare thicket of branches laced together overhead, dignitaries and officials from different lands stepped from fancy coaches to meander the remaining distance to the confessor's palace. Taharan troops stood like banks at the edge of the trickling river of arriving guests.
"I cannot help it, Lord General," Lunetta complained as she scratched. "Ever since we arrived in Adendril, my arms be itching. I have never felt it like this before."
People joining the flow stared openly at Lunetta. Her tattered rags made her stand out like a leper at a coronation. She seemed oblivious of the mocking stares. More likely, she thought them looks of admiration. She had, on any number of occasions, begged off donning any of the dresses Tobias offered her, saying that none were the match of her pretties. Since they seemed to keep her mind occupied and off the keeper's taint, he never went so far as to insist she wear something else, and besides, he thought it blasphemy to make one touched by evil look appealing. The arriving men were dressed in their finest robes, coats, or furs. Though some wore ornate swords, Tobias was sure they were only decoration, and doubted that one of them had ever been drawn in fear, much less anger. As an occasional wrap billowed open, he could see that the women were attired in elegant layered gowns, the setting sun glinting off the jewels at their necks, wrists, and fingers. It would appear they were all so excited to be invited to the confessor's palace to meet the new Lord Rahl that they had not elicited a threat from the Daharan soldiers. By their smiles and chatter, they all seemed anxious to ingratiate themselves with the new Lord Rahl. Tobias ground his teeth.
"If you don't stop scratching, I'll tie your hands behind your back."
Lunetta dropped her hands to her sides and stopped with a gasp. Tobias and Galtero looked up to see bodies impaled on poles to each side of the promenade ahead. As the three of them approached, he realized they weren't men but scaled creatures only the keeper could have conceived. As they proceeded, a stink enveloped them, as thick as a bog mist, making them fear to draw breath lest it blacken their lungs. Some of the poles held only heads, some held whole bodies, and others parts of bodies. All appeared to have been killed in a brutal battle. Some of the beasts had been ripped open, and several were cleaved completely in two, their innards hanging frozen from what was left of them. It was like stepping through a monument to evil, through the gates to the underworld. The other guests covered their noses as best they could with whatever they had handy. A few of the finely dressed women sank to the ground in a swoon. Attendants rushed to their aid, fanning them with handkerchiefs or rubbing a bit of snow on their foreheads. Some of the people stared in astonishment while others shuddered so violently that Tobias could hear their teeth rattling. By the time they had run the gauntlet of sights and smells, everyone around them was in a state of either high anxiety or open alarm. Tobias, having often walked among evil, regarded his fellow guests with disgust. When a shaken diplomat asked, one of the Daharans to the side explained that the creatures had attacked the city and Lord Rahl had slain them. The mood of the guests brightened. As they moved on, their voices became exuberant as they chatted about the honor of meeting such a man as the new Lord Rahl, the master of all Dahara. Effervescent chuckles drifted on the chilling air. Galtero leaned close.
While I was out earlier, before all the chanting and the soldiers around the city were still talkative, they told me to be wary that there had been attacks by unseen creatures, and a number of their men, as well as people on the streets, had been killed.
Tobias remembered the old woman telling him that scaled creatures, he couldn't recall what she had called them, had begun to appear out of the air to gut anyone in their way. Lunetta had said that the woman's words were true. These must be the creatures.
How convenient of Lord Rahl to arrive just in time to slay the creatures and save the city.
Mriswith, Lunetta said.
What?
The woman said that the creatures be called Mriswith.
Tobias nodded.
Yes, I believe you're right, Mriswith.
White columns towered outside the entrance to the palace. The ranks of soldiers to each side funneled them through white carved doors spread wide and into a grand hall lit with windows of pale blue glass set between polished white marble columns topped with gold capitals. Tobias Brogan could feel himself being sucked into the belly of evil. The other guests, had one of them known better, would be shuddering at the living monument to profanity that surrounded them instead of dead carcasses. After a journey through elegant halls and chambers with enough granite and marble to build a mountain, they at last passed through tall mahogany doors to enter an enormous chamber, capped with a huge dome. Ornate frescoes of men and women swept across the ceiling, overlooking the assembly. Round windows around the lower edge of the dome let in the waning light and revealed clouds gathering in a darkening sky. Across the room, on a semicircular dais, the chairs behind the resplendent carved desk sat empty. Arched openings around the room covered stairways up to colonnaded balconies edged with sinuous, polished mahogany railings. The balconies were filled with people, he noticed. Not finely dressed nobility like those on the main floor, but common working people. The other guests noticed, too, and cast disapproving glances up at the riffraff in the shadows behind the railings. The people crowded there stood back from the railings, as if seeking obscurity in the darkness, lest any of them should be recognized and called to account for daring to be at so grand a function. It was customary for a great man to be introduced to the people in authority first, before letting himself be known to ordinary people. Ignoring the audience in the balcony, the guests spread out across the patterned marble floor, keeping distance between themselves and the two blood of the fold, and trying to make it seem accidental rather than by intention that they avoided the two. They looked about expectantly for their host while bending to whisper among themselves. Dressed as finely as they were, they almost looked to be part of the ornate carvings and decoration. None betrayed being awed by the grandeur of the confessor's palace. Tobias guessed that most were frequent visitors. Though he had never been to Adendrill before, he knew sycophants when he saw them. His own king had been surrounded by enough of them. Lunetta stayed close to his side, only mildly interested in the imposing architecture around her. She took no notice of the people who stared at her, though there were fewer of those now. They were more interested in each other, and in the prospect of finally meeting Lord Rawl than in worrying about an odd woman standing between two crimson-caped blood of the fold. Galtero's gaze swept the expansive room, ignoring the opulence and instead taking constant appraisal of the people, the soldiers, and the exits. The swords he and Tobias wore were not decoration. Despite his revulsion, Tobias couldn't help marveling at where he stood. This was the spot from where the mother confessors and wizards had pulled the strings of the Midlands. This was where the Council, for thousands of years, had stood for unity while preserving and protecting magic. This was the spot from which the Keeper's tendrils spread forth. That unity was shattered now. Magic had lost its grip on man, lost its protection. The age of magic was ended. The Midlands was ended. Soon the palace would be filled with crimson capes, and only the blood of the fold would be seated at the dais. Tobias smiled. Events were moving inexorably toward a providential end. A man and woman drifted near purposefully, Tobias thought. The woman, with the pile of black hair and wispy curls hanging down around her painted face, leaned casually toward him.
Imagine we are invited here and they don't even have anything to eat.
She smoothed the lace at the bosom of her yellow dress, a polite smile coming to her impossibly red lips as she waited for him to speak. He didn't, and she went on.
Seems very vulgar not to offer so much as a drop of wine, don't you think? Considering that we've come on such short notice and all, I hope he doesn't expect we will accept his invitation again after treating us so boorishly.
Tobias clasped his hands behind his back.
Do you know Lord Rawl?
I may have met him before, I don't recall.
She brushed a speck, which he couldn't see, from her bare shoulder, affording the jewels on her fingers, which even someone across the room would have been able to see, the opportunity to glitter before his eyes.
I'm invited to so many of these affairs here at the palace that I have difficulty remembering all the people who strive to meet me. After all, Duke Lumholtz and I would appear to find ourselves in a position of leadership, what with Prince Fyron having been murdered.
Her red lips plumped into a simper.
I do know that I've never met any of the blood of the fold here before. After all, the council has always viewed the blood as officious. Not that I'm saying I would agree, mind you, but they have forbade them from practicing their craft anywhere outside their homeland. Of course, we would seem to be without a council now. Quite ghastly, they're being killed like they were right here, and while they were deliberating the future course of the Midlands. What brings you here, sir?
Tobias glanced past her to see soldiers closing the doors. He knuckled his mustache as he started wandering toward the dais.
I was invited, the same as you.
Duchess Lumholtz strolled with him.
I hear that the blood are held in high esteem by the Imperial Order.
The man with her, dressed in a gold-braided blue coat and displaying the carriage of authority, listened with strained indifference as he worked at appearing to have his attention elsewhere. By his dark hair and heavy brow, Tobias had already guessed him as Keltish. The Keltans had been quick to align themselves with the Order, and possessively guarded their high status among them. They also knew that the Imperial Order respected the opinion of the Blood of the Fold.
I am surprised, madam, that you hear anything as much as you talk.
Her face flushed as red as her lips. Tobias was spared her predictable, indignant retort when the crowd noticed a commotion across the room. He was not tall enough to see over the turned heads, so he waited patiently, knowing that in all likelihood Lord Rawl would take to the raised dais. He had placed himself carefully for that probability, close enough to be able to make an appraisal, but not so close as to stand out. Unlike the other guests, he knew this was no social function. This would likely be a stormy night, and if there was lightning, he didn't want to be the tallest tree. Tobias Brogan, unlike the fluttering fools about him, knew when prudence was warranted. Across the room, people hurriedly tried to make way for an echelon of Daharan soldiers, wedging them aside to clear a path. A massive rank of pikemen followed, peeling off in pairs to form an ironclad corridor free of guests. The echelon deployed before the dais, a grim protective wedge of Daharan muscle and steel. The swift precision was impressive. High-ranking Daharan officers marched up the corridor to stand behind the dais. Over the top of Lunetta's head, Tobias met Galtero's icy gaze. No social function, indeed. The crowd buzzed in nervous anticipation as they waited to see what was to come next. By the whispers Tobias could overhear, this was well beyond precedent in the Confessor's palace. Red-faced dignitaries murmured their indignation to one another over what they considered an intolerable use of armed force in the council chambers, where diplomatic negotiation was the rule. Brogan had no tolerance for diplomacy. Blood worked better and left a more lasting impression. He was getting the impression that Lord Rawl understood this, too, unlike the sea of obsequious faces crowding the floor. Tobias knew what this Lord Rawl wanted. It was only to be expected. After all, the Daharans had shouldered most of the load for the Imperial Order. In the mountains, he had met a force that had been mostly Daharan on their way to Ebenicia. The Daharans had taken Adendrill, seen to keeping order, and then let the Imperial Order have dominion over it. In the name of the Order, they had put their flesh against the steel of rebels. Yet others, such as Keltans, like Duke Lumholtz, had held the positions of power and handed down the orders, expecting the Daharans to fall on the points of enemy blades. Lord Rawl no doubt intended to lay claim to a place of high rank among the Imperial Order, and was going to coerce the gathered representatives into acceding. Tobias almost wished there had been food offered, so that he could watch all the scheming officials choke on it when the new Lord Rawl made his demands. The two Daharans who entered next were so huge that Tobias could see their approach over the heads of the crowd. When they came into full view, and he could see their leather armor, chain mail, and sharpened bands above their elbows, Galtero whispered to him over Lunetta's head.
"I've seen those two before."
"Where?" Tobias whispered back. Galtero shook his head as he watched the men.
"Out on the street somewhere."
Tobias turned back, and to his astonishment saw three women in red leather following the two huge Daharans. From the reports Tobias had heard, they could be nothing other than Mord Sith. Mord Sith had a reputation for being wholly unhealthy to those with magic who opposed them. Tobias had once sought to acquire the services of one of these women, but had been told that they served only the master of Dahara, and were not indulgent of anyone making offers of any kind. As he had heard it told, they could not be bought for any price. If the Mord Sith made the crowd edgy, what came next made them gasp. Mouths dropped at the sight of a monstrous beast, one with claws, fangs, and wings. Even Tobias stiffened at the sight of a gar. Short-tailed gars were wildly aggressive, bloodthirsty brutes that would eat anything living. Since the boundary had fallen the past spring, gars had caused the blood of the fold no small amount of trouble. For the moment, this beast walked calmly behind the three women. When Tobias checked that his sword was clear in its scabbard, he noticed Galtero doing the same.
"Please, Lord General," Lunetta whined. "I want to leave now."
She was furiously scratching her arms. Brogan gripped her upper arm and drew her close, whispering through clenched teeth.
"You pay attention to this, Lord Rawl, or I'll find I have no further use for you. Do you understand? And stop that scratching."
Her eyes watered as he twisted her arm.
"Yes, Lord General."
"You pay attention to what he says."
She nodded as the two huge Daharans took places at either end of the dais. The three women in red leather stepped up between them, leaving a place in the center empty, probably for Lord Rawl when he arrived at last. The gar towered behind the chairs. The blonde-headed Mord Sith near the center of the dais looked around the room with a penetrating blue-eyed gaze that commanded silence.
"People of the Midlands," she said,
lifting an introductory arm to the empty air above the desk.
"I present Lord Rawl."
A shadow formed in the air. A black cloak appeared suddenly, and as it was thrown wide, there, standing atop the dais, was a man. Those near the front fell back in alarm. A scattering of people cried out in terror. Some called for the Creator's protection, others beseeched the spirits to intercede on their behalf, and some fell to their knees. While many stood in mute shock, a few of the decorative swords were drawn for the first time in fear. When a Dharan in the front of the echelon calmly warned in a low, icy voice to sheathe the weapons, they were reluctantly returned to scabbards. Lunetta was scratching frantically as she gazed up at the man, but Brogan didn't stop her this time. Even he could feel his skin crawling with the evil of magic. The man atop the dais waited patiently for the crowd to become silent, and then spoke in a quiet voice. "I am Richard Rawl, called by the Dharan's Lord Rawl. Other peoples have other titles by which I am known. Prophecies given in the dim past, before the Midlands was born, have placed appellation upon me." He stepped down off the dais to stand between the Mordsith. "But it is the future I come before you to address. Though not as large as the two Dharan standing at each end of the curved dais, he was a big man, tall and muscular and surprisingly young. His clothes, black cloak and high boots, dark trousers and plain shirt, were unassuming, more so for one called Lord. Though it was hard to miss the gleam of a silver and gold scabbard at his hip, he looked to be nothing so much as a simple woodsman. Tobias thought, too, that the man looked tired, as if he bore a mountain of responsibility on his shoulders. Tobias was hardly a stranger to combat, and knew by the grace with which this young man carried himself, by the easy way the baldric lay across his shoulder, and by the way the sword moved with him at his hip, that he was not a man to be taken lightly. The sword was not there for decoration, it was a weapon. He looked to be a man who had made a great many desperate decisions of late, and had lived through them all. For all his outward humble appearance, he had an inexplicable air of authority about him, and a bearing that commanded attention. Already many of the women in the room had recovered their composure, and were beginning to flash him private smiles as they batted their lashes, falling into their well-practiced habits of ingratiating themselves with those wielding power. Even if the man were not ruggedly handsome, they would have done the same, but perhaps with less sincerity. Lord Rawl either didn't notice their warming demeanor, or chose not to. But it was his eyes that interested Tobias Brogan. Eyes were the mark of a man's nature, and the one thing that rarely deceived him. When this man's steely gaze settled on people, some stepped back without realizing it, some froze, and others fidgeted. When those eyes turned in his direction and the gaze settled on him for the first time, Tobias took a measure of Lord Rawl's heart and soul. That brief look was all he needed. This was a very dangerous man. Though he was young and ill at ease, being the center of all eyes, this was a man who would fight with a vengeance. Tobias had seen eyes like this before. This was a man who would jump headlong over a cliff to come after you.
"I know him," Galtero whispered. "What? How?" "Earlier today, when I was picking up witnesses, I came across this man. I was going to bring him to you for questioning, but those two big guards showed up and carried him off. Unfortunate, it would have been."
The hush of the room caused Tobias to look up. Lord Rawl was staring at him. It was like looking into the penetrating gray-eyed glare of a raptor. Lord Rawl's eyes shifted to Lunetta. She stood frozen in the light of his gaze. Surprisingly, a small smile came to his lips.
"Of all the women at the ball," Lord Rawl said to her, "your dress is the prettiest."
Lunetta beamed. Tobias almost laughed out loud. Lord Rawl had just delivered a cutting message to the others in the room. Their social status counted for nothing with him. Tobias was suddenly beginning to enjoy himself. Perhaps the Order would not be so poorly served with a man like this among their leaders.
"The Imperial Order," Lord Rawl began, "believes that the time has come for the world to be united under a common canon, theirs. They say that magic is responsible for all man's failings, misfortunes, and troubles. They claim all evil to be the external influence of magic. They say the time has come for magic to pass from the world."
Some in the room murmured their agreement, some grumbled their skepticism, but most stood mute. Lord Rawl laid an arm across the top of the largest chair, the one in the center.
"In order for their vision to be complete, and in light of their self-proclaimed divine cause, they will suffer the sovereignty of no land. They wish for all to be brought under their influence, and to go forward into the future as one people, subjects of the Imperial Order."
He paused for a moment, as he met the gaze of many in the crowd.
"Magic is not a fount of evil. This is merely an excuse for their actions as they ascend to supremacy."
Whispering swept back through the room, and low undertones of arguments boiled up. Duchess Lumholtz strode forward, commanding attention. She smiled at Lord Rawl before bowing her head.
Lord Rawl, what you say is all very interesting, but the blood of the fold here—
She flicked her hand in the direction of Tobias and at the same time cast him an icy glare.
Say that all magic is spewed forth by the Keeper.
Brogan neither said anything nor moved. Lord Rawl didn't look in his direction, but instead kept his gaze on the Duchess.
A child, come anew into the world, is magic. Would you call that evil?
Lifting an imperious hand, she quieted the crowd at her back.
The blood of the fold preaches that magic is created by the Keeper himself, and thereby can only be evil incarnate.
From various areas around the floor and up in the balcony, people shouted their agreement. This time it was Lord Rawl who lifted a hand, bringing them to silence.
The Keeper is the destroyer, the bane of light and life, the breath of death. As I hear it told, it is the Creator, through his power and majesty, who brings all things to be.
Almost as one, the crowd shouted that it was true.
In that case, Lord Rawl said, to believe that magic springs from the Keeper is blasphemy. Could the Keeper create a newborn child? To ascribe the power to create, which is the sole domain of the Creator, to the Keeper, is to grant to the Keeper that which is chaste, and only the Creator's. The Keeper cannot create. To hold such a profane belief could only be heresy.
Silence fell like a pall over the room. Lord Rawl cocked his head to the Duchess.
Did you step forward, my lady, to confess to being a heretic, or simply to accuse another of heresy for personal gain?
With a face once again as red as her tight lips, she took several steps back to her husband's side. The Duke, his own face no longer calm, shook a finger at Lord Rawl.
Tricks with words will not change the fact that the Imperial Order fights the Keeper's evil, and has come to unite us against him. They wish only for all people to prosper together. Magic will deny that right to mankind. I am Keltish, and proud of it, but it is time to move beyond fragmented and frail lands standing alone. We have had extensive talks with the Order, and they have proven themselves a civilized and decent lot, interested in joining all lands in peace.
A noble ideal, Lord Rawl answered in a quiet tone.
One you already had in the unity of the Midlands, yet you threw it away for avarice. The Imperial Order is different. It offers true strength and true lasting peace.
Lord Rawl fixed the Duke with a glare. Graveyards rarely breach a peace. He turned his glare on the crowd. Not long ago, an army of the Order swept through the heart of the Midlands, seeking to bring others into their fold. Many joined and swelled their force. A Dharan general named Riggs led them, along with officers of several lands, and was assisted by a wizard, Slagel, of Keltish blood. Well over 100,000 strong, they bore down on Ebenicia, the crown city of Galia. The Imperial Order bade the people of Ebenicia to join them and become subjects of the Order. When called upon to oppose aggression against the Midlands, the people of Ebenicia bravely did so. They refused to abandon their commitment to unity and a common defense that was the Midlands. The Duke opened his mouth to speak, but for the first time, Lord Rawl's voice became menacing in tone and cut off his words. The Galian army defended the city to the last man. The wizard used his power to rent the city walls, and the Imperial Order poured in. Once the greatly outnumbered Galian defenders had been eliminated, the Imperial Order did not occupy the city, but instead went through it like a pack of howling animals, raping, torturing, and butchering helpless people. Lord Rawl, his jaw clenched tight, leaned across the desk and pointed a finger at Duke Lumholtz. The Order slaughtered every living person in Ebenicia. The old, the young, the newborn, they impaled defenseless, pregnant women in order to kill both mother and unborn child. His face red with rage, he slammed his fist to the desk. Everyone jumped. With that act, the Imperial Order put the lie to anything they say. They have lost the right to tell anyone anything about what is right and what is wicked. They are without virtue. They come for one reason and one reason only, to vanquish and subjugate. They slaughtered the people of Ebenicia to show others what they had to offer anyone who fails to submit. They will not be halted by borders or by reason. Men with the blood of babes on their blades have no ethics. Don't you dare stand there and try to tell me otherwise. The Imperial Order is beyond defense. They have shown the fangs behind their smile, and by the spirits, they have lost the right to offer words and have them taken as truth. Taking a calming breath, Lord Rawl straightened. Both those innocents at the points of blades and those at the hilts forfeited much that day. The ones at the points
forfeited their lives. The ones at the hilt forfeited their humanity and their right to be heard, much less believed. They have cast themselves and any who join them as my enemy.
And who were these troops? Someone else asked. Many were Deharan, by your own admission. You lead the Deharans by your own admission. When the boundary came down last spring, the Deharan swept in and committed atrocities much the same as you recount. Though Adendril was spared that cruelty, many other cities and towns suffered the same fate as Ebenicia, but at the hands of Dahara. Now you ask us to believe you. You are no better.
Lord Rahl nodded. What you say about Dahara is true. Dahara was led by my father, Darkan Rahl, who was a stranger to me. He did not raise me or teach me his ways. What he wanted was much the same as the Imperial Order wants, to conquer all lands and rule all people. Where the Order is a monolithic cause, his was a personal quest. Besides using brute force to obtain his ends, he also used magic, much the same as the Order. I stand against everything Darkan Rahl stood for. He would stop at no evil act to have his way. He tortured and killed countless innocent people and suppressed magic so that it could not be used against him, the same as the Order would do.
Then you're the same as he.
Lord Rahl shook his head. No, I am not. I do not lust to rule. I take up this sword only because I have the ability to help oppose oppression. I fought on the side of the Midlands against my father. In the end, I killed him for his crimes. When he used his vile magic to return from the underworld, I used magic to stop him and send his spirit back to the Keeper. I used magic again to close a doorway the Keeper was using to send his minions into this world. Brogan ground his teeth. He knew from experience that Banelings often tried to hide their true nature by regaling you with stories of how valiantly they had fought the Keeper and his minions. He had heard enough of these spurious accounts to recognize them as diversions from the actual evil in the person's heart. The Keeper's followers were often too cowardly to show their true nature, and so hid behind such boasts and concocted tales. In fact, he would have arrived in Adendril sooner had he not come across so many pockets of perversion after he had left Nicobarisi. Villages and towns, where everyone appeared to be living pious lives, turned out to be riddled with wickedness. When some of the more strident defenders of their virtue were put to a proper questioning, they finally confessed their blasphemy. When put to a proper questioning, the names of Streganicha and Banelings, who lived in the neighborhood and had seduced them to evil with the use of magic, had rolled off their tongues. The only solution had been purification. Whole villages and towns had needed to be put to the torch. Not even a signpost to the Keeper's lairs remained. The blood of the fold had done the Creator's work, but it had taken time and effort. Seething, Brogan returned his attention to Lord Rahl's words. I take up this challenge only because the sword has been thrust into my hand. I ask that you not judge me by who my father was, but by what I do. I do not slaughter innocent, defenseless people. The Imperial Order does. Until I violate the trust of honest people, I have the right to be granted honest judgment. I cannot stand by and watch evil men triumph. I will fight with everything I have, including magic. If you side with these murderers, you will find no mercy under my sword.
All we want is peace, someone shouted.
Lord Rahl nodded. I, too, wish nothing more than that there were peace, and I could go home to my beloved woods and lead a simple life. But I can't. Any more than we can go back to the simple innocence of our childhood. Responsibility has been thrust upon me. Turning your back on innocence in need of help makes you the attacker's accomplice. It is in the name of the innocent and defenseless that I take up the sword and fight this battle. Lord Rahl returned his arm to the centered chair. This is the chair of the Mother Confessor. For thousands of years, the Mother Confessors have ruled the Midlands with a benevolent hand, struggling to hold the lands together, to have all the people of the Midlands live as neighbors in peace, and to let them tend to their own affairs without fear of outside force. He let his gaze roam the eyes watching him. The Council sought to break the unity and peace for which this room, this palace, and this city stand, and of which you speak so longingly. They unanimously condemned her to death and had her executed. Lord Rahl slowly drew his sword and laid the weapon at the front edge of the desk where all could see it. I told you I am known by different titles. I am also known as the Seeker of Truth, named so by the First Wizard. I carry the Sword of Truth by right. Last night, I executed the Council for their treason. You are the representatives of the lands of the Midlands,
The Mother Confessor offered you the chance to stand together, and you turned your backs on that offer, and on her.
A man beyond Tobias's view broke the icy silence.
Not all of us approved of the action the Council took. Many of us wish the Midlands to stand. The Midlands will be joined yet again and made stronger for the struggle.
Many in the crowd voiced their agreement, vowing to do their best to bring unity again. Others remained silent.
It is too late for that. You have had your chance. The Mother Confessor suffered your bickering and intractability.
Lord Rawl slammed his sword back into its scabbard.
I will not.
What are you talking about? Duke Lumholtz asked, irritation embrittling his tone.
You're from Dahara. You've no right to tell us how the Midlands will function. The Midlands is our affair.
Lord Rawl stood statue still as he directed his soft but commanding voice to the crowd.
There is no Midlands. I dissolve it, here and now. From now on, each land is on its own.
The Midlands is not your toy.
Nor is it Kelton's, Lord Rawl said. It was the design of Kelton to rule the Midlands.
How dare you accuse us of...
Lord Rawl held up his hand, bidding silence.
You are no more rapacious than some of the others. Many of you were anxious to have the Mother Confessors and wizards out of your hair so you could carve up the spoils.
Lunetta tugged on his arm.
True, she whispered.
Brogan silenced her with an icy look.
The Midlands will not tolerate this interference in our business,
another voice called out.
I am not here to discuss the governing of the Midlands. I have just told you, the Midlands is dissolved.
Lord Rawl regarded the crowd with a glare of such deadly commitment that Tobias had to remind himself to take another breath.
I am here to dictate the terms of your surrender.
The crowd flinched as one. Angry shouts erupted and built until the room roared. Red-faced men swore oaths as they shook their fists. Duke Lumholtz shouted everyone to silence, and then turned back to the dais.
I don't know what foolish ideas you've gotten into your head, young man, but the Imperial Order is in charge of this city. Many have come to reasonable agreements with them. The Midlands will be preserved, will stand united through the Order, and will never surrender to the likes of Dahara.
When the crowd surged toward Lord Rawl, red rods appeared in the Mord Sith's hands. The echelon of soldiers drew steel, pikes came down, and the Gar's wings snapped open. The beast snarled, its fangs dripping and its green eyes glowing. Lord Rawl stood like a granite wall. The crowd halted and then receded. Lord Rawl's whole body took on the same tight, dangerous demeanor as his glare.
You were offered a chance to preserve the Midlands, and you failed. Dahara has been liberated from the fist of the Imperial Order and holds Adendrill.
You only think you hold Adendrill, the Duke said. We have troops here, as do a great many of the lands, and we're not about to let the city fall.
Little late for that, too.
Lord Rawl held out a hand.
May I introduce General Rybish, the commander of all Daharan forces in this sector?
The general, a muscular man with a rust-colored beard and combat scars, stepped up onto the dais, clapping a fist to his heart in salute to Lord Rawl before turning to the people.
My troops command and surround Adendrill. My men have been sitting on this city for months now. We are finally free of the grip of the Order, and are once again Daharans led by Master Rawl. Dahara troops don't like sitting around. If any of you would like a fight, I personally would welcome it, though Lord Rawl has commanded that we not be the ones to start the killing. But if called to defend ourselves, the spirits know we will finish it. I'm bored nearly to death with the tedium of occupation, and I'd much rather have something more interesting to do, something I'm very good at. Each of your lands has detachments of troops stationed to guard your palaces. In my professional judgment, if all of you decided to contest the city with the troops you have at hand, and did it in an organized fashion, it would take a day, maybe two, for us to rout them. When it was done, we would have no more troubles. Once battle is at hand, Daharans don't take prisoners.
The general stepped back with a bow to Lord Rawl. Everyone started talking at once, some angrily shaking their fists and shouting to be heard. Lord Rawl thrust his hand into the air.
Silence!
It came almost instantly, and he went on.
I have invited you here to hear what I have to say. After you have decided to surrender to Dahara, then I will be interested in what you have to say, not before.
The Imperial Order wishes to rule all of Dahara and all of the Midlands. They have lost Dahara. I rule Dahara. They have lost Adendrill. Dahara rules Adendrill.
You had a chance at unity, and you squandered it. That chance has passed into history.
You now have but two choices. Your first is to choose to side with the Imperial Order. They will rule with an iron fist. You will have no say and no rights. All magic will be exterminated, except the magic with which they dominate you. If you live, your lives will be a dark struggle without the spark of hope for freedom. You will be their slaves. Your other choice is to surrender to Dahara. You will follow the law of Dahara. Once you are one with us, you will have a say in those laws. We have no desire to extinguish the diversity that is the Midlands. You will have the right to the fruits of your labor and the right to trade and flourish, as long as you work within the larger context of law and the rights of others. Magic will be protected, and your children will be born into a world of freedom where anything is possible. And once the Imperial Order is exterminated, there will be peace, true peace. There will be a price, your sovereignty. While you will be allowed to maintain your own lands and cultures, you will not be allowed to have standing armies. The only men-at-arms will be those common to all, under the banner of Dahara. This will not be a council of independent lands. Your surrender is mandatory. Surrender is the price each land will pay for peace, and the proof of your commitment to it. Much as you all paid a tribute to Adendril, no land, no people will bear all the burden of freedom. All lands, all people, will pay a tax sufficient to see to the common defense and no more. All will pay equally, none will be favored. The room erupted with protests, with most claiming it would be robbery of what was theirs. Lord Rawl silenced them with nothing more than his glare. Nothing gained without cost is valued. I was reminded of that fact only today. She was the one we buried. Freedom has a cost, and all will bear it, so that all will value and preserve it. The people up in the balcony broke out in near riot, protesting that they were promised gold, that it was theirs, and that they could not afford to pay any tax. Chanting began, demanding the gold be turned over to them. Once more, Lord Rawl held up a hand, commanding silence. The man who promised you gold for nothing is dead. Dig him up and complain to him if you wish. The men who will fight for your freedom will require provisions, and our troops will not steal them. Those of you who can provide food and services will be paid a fair price for your labor and goods. All will participate in attaining freedom and peace, if not with service under arms, then at minimum with a tax to support our troops. All, no matter their means, must have an investment in their freedom, and will pay their part. This principle is law and inviolate. If you do not wish to comply, then leave Adendril and go to the Imperial Order. You are free to demand gold of them, as it was they who made the promise. I will not keep it for them. You are free to choose, with us or against us. If you are with us, then you will help us. Think carefully before you decide to leave. For if you leave and decide later that you would rather not suffer the order any longer, then you will pay double the tax for a period of 10 years in order to earn your way back. The crowd in the balconies gasped. A woman on the floor near the front spoke up in a distraught voice.
What if we choose neither? It is against our principles to fight. We want to be left alone to go about our lives. What if we choose not to fight, to simply go about our business?
Do you arrogantly believe that we want to fight because we would stop the slaughter, and you are somehow better because you wish not to? Or that we will carry the load by ourselves so that you too may enjoy the freedom to live by your principles? You can contribute in other ways without taking up a sword, but contribute you must. You can help tend the wounded. You can help the families of men gone to fight. You can help build and maintain roads to get supplies to them. There are any number of ways you can help, but you will help. You will pay the tax, the same as everyone else. There will be no bystanders. If you choose not to surrender, you will stand alone. The Order intends to conquer all people and lands. Because there is no other way to stop them, I can intend no less. Sooner or later, you will be ruled by one of us. Pray it is not the Order. Those lands that choose not to surrender to us will be placed under blockade and isolated until we have time to invade and conquer you, or the Order does. None of our people will be allowed to trade with you, under penalty of prosecution for treason, and you will not be allowed to transport, trade, or travel through our land. The opportunity of surrender I give now carries incentives. You will be able to join us without prejudice or sanctions. Once this peaceful offer to surrender has expired, and it becomes necessary to conquer you, you will be conquered, and you will surrender, but the terms will be harsh. Every one of your people will pay triple the tax for a period of 30 years. It wouldn't be fair to punish future generations for the actions of this.
Neighboring lands will prosper and grow while you do not, burdened as you will be with higher costs to your surrender. Your land will eventually recover, but you will probably not live long enough to see it. Be warned. I intend to wipe the butchers called the Imperial Order from the face of the land. If you do more than try to stand aside, and are foolish enough to join with them, then you cast your fate with theirs. No mercy will be granted.
You can't get away with this!
An anonymous voice in the crowd called out.
We'll stop you!
The Midlands is fragmented, and cannot be made whole again, or I would instead join with you. What is past, and cannot be returned. The spirit of the Midlands will live on with those of us who honor its purpose. The Mother Confessor committed the Midlands to war without mercy against the tyranny of the Imperial Order. Honor her command and the ideals of the Midlands in the only way that it will succeed. Surrender to Dahara. If you join with the Imperial Order, then you stand against everything the Midlands represented. A force of Galean soldiers, led by the Queen of Galea herself, hunted down the butchers of Ebenicia and killed them to a man. She has shown us all that the Imperial Order is vincible. I am engaged to wed the Queen of Galea, Kaelin Amnell, and join her people to mine, and thereby show all that I will not stand for the crimes committed, even if they were committed by Daharan troops. Galea and Dahara will be the first to join in the new union, through Galea's surrender to Dahara. My marriage to her will show all that it will be a union made of mutual respect, demonstrating that it can be done without blood conquest or the lust for power, and instead for strength and a hope of a new and better life. She, no less than I, intends to annihilate the Imperial Order. She has proven her heart with cold steel. The crowd, both those on the main floor and those in the balconies, started crying out questions and demands. Lord Rawl shouted them down. Enough! The people grudgingly fell silent once more. I have heard all I intend to hear. I have told you the way it will be. Do not mistakenly think I will tolerate the way you behaved as nations of the Midlands. I will not. Until you surrender, you are all potential enemies, and will be treated as such. Your troops will at once surrender their weapons, one way or another, and will not be allowed to leave the custody of the Dahiran troops now surrounding your palaces. Each of you will send a small delegation to your homeland to convey my message as I have told it to you today. Don't think to try my patience. Delay could cost you everything. Do not think to wile me out of special conditions. There will be none. Each land, whether large or small, will be treated the same, and must surrender. If you choose to surrender, we welcome you with open arms, and expect you to contribute to the whole. He looked to the balconies. You too have been charged with a responsibility. Contribute to our survival or leave the city. I am not pretending it will be easy. We stand against a foe without conscience. The creatures on the poles outside were sent against us. Consider their fate while you think on my words. If you choose to join with the Imperial Order, then I pray the spirits will be kinder to you in the afterlife than I will be in this. You may go. Chapter 13. The guards crossed their pikes before the door. Lord Rawl wishes to speak with you. None of the other guests remained in the room. Brogan had held back to the last, in order to see if any would seek a private audience with Lord Rawl. Most had left in great haste, but a few had lingered, as Brogan had thought they would. Their polite inquiries were turned away by the guards. The balconies, too, had been emptied. Brogan and Galtero, with Lunetta between, crossed the expanse of marble to the dais, accompanied by their footsteps echoing around the dome, along with the metallic clatter of the armor from the guards behind them. Lamplight cast a warm glow in the immense, ornate stone room. Lord Rawl leaned back in a chair to the side of the Mother Confessor's chair and watched them come. Most of the Dahiran soldiers had been dismissed, along with the guests. General Rybish stood to the side of the dais, his face grim. The two huge guards to the ends, and the three Mord Sith beside Lord Rawl watched, too, with a silent intensity of coiled vipers. The Gar towered behind the chairs, watching with glowing green eyes as they came to a halt before the desk. You may go, General Rybish said to the remaining soldiers. After clapping a fist to their hearts, they departed. After Lord Rawl had watched the tall double doors close, he looked to Galtero, Brogan, and then let his gaze settle on Lunetta. Welcome. I am Richard. What is your name?
Lunetta, Lord Rawl,
she giggled as she performed an unpracticed curtsy.
Lord Rawl's gaze shifted to Galtero, and Galtero shifted his weight to his other foot.
I apologize, Lord Rawl, for nearly trampling you today.
Apology accepted. Lord Rawl smiled to himself. See how easy that was? Galtero said nothing. Lord Rawl at last looked to Brogan, his expression turning serious.
Lord General Brogan, I want to know why you have been abducting people.
Tobias spread his hands.
Abducting people? Lord Rawl, we have done no such thing, nor would we.
I doubt you are a man who tolerates evasive answers, General Brogan. We have that in common. Tobias cleared his throat.
Lord Rawl, there must be some misunderstanding. When we arrived here in Aidendrill in order to offer our assistance to the cause of peace, we found the city be in disarray and matters of authority in a state of confusion. We invited a few people to our palace in order to help determine what dangers be about, nothing more.
Lord Rawl leaned forward. About the only thing you were interested in was the execution of the Mother Confessor.
Why would that be?
Tobias shrugged.
Lord Rawl, you must realize that my whole life the Mother Confessor be the figure of authority in the Midlands. To come to find she may have been executed disturbs me greatly.
Nearly half the city witnessed the execution and could have told you so. Why did you think it necessary to abduct people off the street to question them about it?
Well, people sometimes have different versions of events when asked separately. They remember events in different ways.
An execution is an execution. What is there to remember differently?
Well, from across a square, how could you tell who it was being led to the block? Only a few people near the front could have seen her face, and many of those would not know the face as hers, even if they did see it.
Lord Rawl's eyes weren't losing their dangerous set, so he quickly went on.
You see, Lord Rawl, I had been hoping that the whole thing might have been a deception.
Deception? The people assembled saw the Mother Confessor beheaded, Lord Rawl stated flatly.
Sometimes people see what they think they will see. It be my hope that they did not really see the Mother Confessor executed, but perhaps just a show so that she could escape. At least, that be my hope. The Mother Confessor stands for peace. It would be a great symbol of hope for the people if the Mother Confessor were still alive. We need her. I was going to offer her my protection if she be alive.
Put the hope from your mind, and dedicate yourself to the future.
But surely, Lord Rawl, you must have heard the rumors of her escape.
I have heard no such rumors. And did you know the Mother Confessor? Brogan let an agreeable smile come to his lips.
Oh, yes, Lord Rawl, quite well, in fact. She visited Nicobarisi on any number of occasions, as we be a valued member of the Midlands.
Really? Lord Rawl's face was unreadable as he looked down from behind the desk. What did she look like?
She was... Well, she had...
Tobias frowned. He had met her, but, strangely, he suddenly realized he couldn't recall what she looked like.
Well, she is difficult to describe, and I am not good with that sort of thing.
What was her name?
Her name?
Yes, her name. You said you knew her well. What was her name?
Well, it was...
Tobias frowned again. How could this be? He was chasing a woman who was the scourge of the pious, the symbol of the magic's suppression of the devout. A woman he hungered to judge and punish more than any of the Keeper's other disciples, and suddenly he couldn't remember what she looked like, or even her name. Confusion tumbled through his thoughts as he struggled to bring her looks to mind. Suddenly it came to him. The death spell. Lunetta had said that in order for it to work, he probably wouldn't recognize her. It hadn't occurred to him that the spell would erase even her name, but that had to be the explanation. Tobias shrugged as he smiled.
I'm sorry, Lord Rawl, but with the things you had to say tonight, my mind seems to be in a scramble.
He chuckled as he tapped the side of his forehead.
I guess I'm getting old and addled. Forgive me.
You abduct people off the street to question them about the Mother Confessor, because you are hoping to find her alive so you can protect her, yet you can't recall what she looks like, or even her name. I hope you can appreciate, General, that from my side of the desk, addled would be a lenient representation. I must insist that, like her name, you forget this foolish, ill-advised quest, and put your mind to the matter of the future of your people.